This week on the Vital Masculinity Podcast, we wrap up our little mini-series on feminism. Stephen and I share some concluding thoughts, as well as share some strategies and suggestions on how to counter feminism. I think we have a pretty good list, but it's by no means exhaustive, so if you have any ideas or suggestions, we'd love to hear them. This mini-series ended up being about twice as long as we expected, so we thank you for staying with us, and we hope you enjoyed it. We have a couple more series on deck, one mini-series on pornography, and a series on love, which will probably span at least a couple months, so stay tuned for those. And now let's get to our concluding thoughts on feminism. This certainly won't be the last time we talk about this topic, but it will be for now.
What is going on, everyone? You are listening to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. My name is Stephen Sloyer, and joining me, as always, is my dear friend, Brian Murphy. Brian, how are you doing today, man?
Not too bad. We're having a heat wave here, which in New York means it's in the mid to high 80s.
let's not joke about that, man. It's like 95 here in North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm here then, but still 85 is too hot for me.
Yeah, I'm just glad that my AC works. We had an issue with it a couple of weeks ago, and it's always nice to realize how privileged we are, to use that fun word, to have air conditioning. God bless the people, honestly, that lived without it before. It definitely is an actual blessing in many ways.
Yeah, definitely. I wish I had a swimming pool, because I'd be in it right now.
Yeah, well, I think they're still closed down around us because of COVID month. I don't even know what it's going on. But yeah, it's... It's a fun time of year for so many reasons, and at least we're inside during it. But with that being said, we are going to not talk about the heat. We're not going to talk about COVID. We have an episode on that already, so please check that out, called Enduring Calamity with Virtue. We are, for maybe the last time, probably the last time, at least for the time being, going to talk about feminism. And this episode's just going to have some concluding thoughts on it. But I think to kick us off, it's probably good to go back to our old favorite, the Venerable Fulton Sheen. We quoted him before in our episode on Third Wave Feminism from a little essay called Communism and Women, or Communism and Woman, singular. So Brian, would you like to give us a couple of these snippets that we identified that are applicable as we wrap up our thoughts on feminism?
Sure. So this is from the Venerable Fulton Sheen. Modern woman has been made equal with man, but she has not been made happy. She has been emancipated as a pendulum from a clock, and thereby no longer free to swing, or a flower has been emancipated from its roots, only to wither and die. She has been cheapened in her search for mathematical equality in two ways. One, by becoming a victim to man, by becoming only the instrument of his pleasure, ministering to his needs in a sterile exchange of egotism, and two, by becoming a victim to the machine, by subordinating the creative principle of life to the production of non-living things. The important question is not whether a woman finds favor in the eyes of a man, but whether she can satisfy the basic instincts of womanhood. If it were the man that made a difference to a woman, and all that wifehood and motherhood entail, then the least womanly of all women would be found in convents. The fact, however, is that nowhere else are more normal and certainly more happy women to be found on this earth. So why don't we stop here and what are your thoughts so far?
It strikes me still that this was written in the 1940s. This was written right after World War II, and, you know, the things he's addressing have really just been amplified 70 years later, 80 years later. There's just so much that I'm trying to think back on our other episodes about feminism. There's just so much that's gone wrong with the ideals of what a woman should be, what a woman aspires to be. I wish it was like in Fulton Sheen's time, probably just a minority of women, at least a vocal minority. I think now it is, as we've mentioned before, kind of a much more prominent and even a silent majority that have been steeped in feminist thought. And it really has had a lot of destructive results on you know, men, women, relationships, and things like that. So when he talks about satisfying the basic instincts of womanhood, I'm sure that is such a foreign concept to the modern lady, let alone the modern feminist, that, you know, I think that's something that all men and women need to kind of take a very, very big step back and realize that, you know, it's things aren't as they seem to be nowadays if you're just spending time on Twitter and stuff.
I think we don't even know what womanhood is anymore because of feminism. I mean, yeah, we know what it is, but the general concept of womanhood has been discarded because the feminists basically want to be just like men. So if you're trying to be just like men, or if you're saying men and women are exactly the same, then what is womanhood? What is it other than just asserting that I can be like a man?
And here's the thing, really, is that you and I, when we've been doing research on this, when we've been reading books on this, you know, these are in many ways kind of like esoteric tomes. We're learning about masculinity, we're learning about femininity from, you know, people that are great, like the Venerable Fulton Sheen, from books, from articles, from, you know, kind of like authoritative sources like the church and stuff. But it's still, first of all, you know, that's not the majority of things that are being published, but it's still crazy to me that we've gotten to the point in society that in order for us to know what it means to be an actual man, an actual woman, we need to read special books on it. We can't find it in our culture. We can't find it in fiction. We can't find it, like, you know, for the most part, you know, we can't find it from our parents. We definitely can't find it in schools and such. And you know, if I were in Fulton Sheen's time, if I were in the 40s and 50s, I'm sure it would just seem such alien, like such an alien land to me. But here we are, and it just hit me, actually, you know, that is true. We need to you know, go to the darkest depths of Amazon.com or wherever to find books that actually give us an accurate view of manhood and womanhood. And because of that, no one really talks about it, at least not in the public sphere.
Let's see what Fulton Sheen has to say about differences. So I'll keep going on with this quote. What makes the difference in women is not, therefore, a man, but whether certain God-given qualities, which are specifically hers, are given adequate and full expression. These qualities are principally devotion, sacrifice, and love. They need not necessarily be expressed in a family, nor even in a convent. They can find an outlet in the social world, in the care of the sick, the poor, the ignorant. It is sometimes said that the professional woman is hard. This may be true in a few instances, but it is not not because she is in a profession, but because she has alienated her profession from contact with human beings in a way to satisfy the deeper cravings of her heart. It may very well be that the revolt against morality and the exaltation of sensuous pleasure as the purpose of life are due to the loss of the spiritual fulfillment of existence. Having been frustrated and disillusioned, such souls first become bored, then cynical, and finally suicidal. Wherein lies the solution? In a return to the Christian concept, wherein stress is placed not on equality, but on equity. Equity goes beyond equality by claiming superiority in certain aspects of life. Equity is the perfection of equality, not a substitute. It has the advantages of recognizing the specific differences between man and woman, which equality does not have. As a matter of fact, they are not equal in sex. They are quite unequal. And it is not because they are unequal that they, it is only because they are unequal that they complement one another. The violin and the bow are not equal. Each has a superiority of function. So, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think, you know, equity seems to be a term that's thrown around today, and I'm not sure that he's using it in the same way that your social justice people are using it today.
No, certainly not. That was the thing that really stuck out to me. That's, I mean, you and I have covered basically everything that he said, particularly in that last paragraph about that men and women are unequal. That does not mean that, you know, a man is better than a woman, and conversely, it does not mean that a woman is better than a man, but they each have their own, you know, natural superiorities. And because of this, you know, because of how we were made, how we were designed by God, we complement each other. And that's really, I think, the thing that we've lost. And once you lose that kind of, like, I don't want to say normal place, but our natural realms of masculinity and natural realm of femininity, that's when equality, which is in many ways is a false god, comes in and people try to not just level the playing field, but people try to basically smooth out all the curves, all the rough edges, so that men and women are exactly equal.
I like the point that he makes about she doesn't have to necessarily express her womanhood, her femininity, in being a mother or being in a convent. Like the feminists talk about, like, I mean, maybe not so much today, but getting into the workforce and doing things like that. And he doesn't discount that. But I think what the main point he's putting here is if you're doing that and denying yourself, like if you're saying, I want to have kids and a family, but I'm gonna go over this career and, you know, maybe when I'm 40, I'll try to have kids, then that's not going to happen. And maybe you pick a job that you're pressured into that's not very a feminine job, and it kind of is soul-crushing to a woman. And I think that in many ways, that's why we see so many women who have a lot of mental anxiety and depression because they are denying their true nature, what they have been, what they will be good at, and what they have been made to be good at, and trying to deny those things.
Yeah, and the way you describe that to me, and the way that Fulton Sheen describes it, is basically a spiritual crisis. And I think you could say the same thing about masculinity, is we've lost a certain essence about what it means to be human. And that doesn't necessarily just, you know, include men or women. It includes basically, I think, all of Western civilization. We've lost a certain essence. And you could definitely say God. I think that is the chief thing that we have lost in our society. But I think, you know, that trickles down to so many other areas that have led to a lot of these issues. Modern civilization, modern society, modern culture is really not made for humans to do anything other than consume. And I know you and I think we've talked about consumption before, and this, like, you know, I consume, therefore I am kind of mentality. And I know we're going to talk about it in the future, because that's very pervasive even in masculine spheres. But that to me seems to be one of the largest things that's really also driving these things. That the fact that we mentioned in first wave feminism that women were now primary consumers in the economy, that they could be advertised to, they could be marketed to, and not only that, but they could be, you know, propped up as additional labor in the workforce. And that view has really led to, you know, what we're seeing nowadays with, well, everything going on, everything we've talked about in the past couple of episodes, and the issues that people have with feminism. So it seems to me that mindset is that kind of loss is really behind a lot of this drive for equality.
That's an interesting point you make about civilization, because that's actually something that Fulton Sheen talks about here. So let me read this last quote. He says, "The level of any civilization is the level of its womanhood. This is because there is a basic difference between knowing and loving. In knowing something, you bring it down to the level of your understanding. An abstract principle of physics can be understood by an ordinary mind only by examples. But in loving, we always go up to meet the demand of the one loved. If you love music, you have to submit to its laws and disciplines. When man loves woman, it follows that the nobler the woman, the nobler the love, the higher the demands by the woman, the more worthy a man must be. That is why a woman is the measure of the level of our civilization. It is for our age to decide whether woman shall claim equality in sex and the right to work at the same lathe, or whether she will claim equity and give to the world that which no man can give."
Man, you know, it reminds me of that. I don't think it was a meme. I think it was a headline, but actually it may have just been a meme that I shared with you a couple of days ago, where it was the general gist was that men used to do great things until, breasts and other female body parts became widely publicized and easily viewable. I think that's totally true. You know, and I think in the context of what the Venerable Fulton Sheen says here, that just kind of furthers the point. When you cheapen the dignity of women, not only do you affect them, but you affect men. And, you know, it has a lot to do with biology and psychology, but really just has to do with the fact that men used to do really great things to woo women. you think about, and this is kind of a romantic notion, you know, but you think about like Romeo and Juliet, you think about Lancelot and, oh my gosh, Guinevere, you know, and things like that. That may not be the best example considering Guinevere was married to King Arthur. But, you know, nevertheless, you had this, it was a labor, you know, it was a labor. And now people can go on Tinder and swipe a button and, okay, well, I guess if you like the, you know, the fornicating sex, then, okay, I guess you'll decide to move in together, you know, and things like that. That's such a cheap way to have a civilization. Actually, I will take that one step further and say that is not civilization. That is not a society. That's not a healthy society. That is a sign of decay. That is a sign of atrophy. And it reminds me a lot of like the fall of Rome, this real lack of morality among men and women.
That's I agree with your point. And I'm just reminded of, I'm trying to remember where this comes from. I think it's like the red pill or something like that. And the whole idea is that women have absurdly high standards. And, you know, if they have a high-powered career, they want you to have an even higher-power career. You know, this whole idea that we need to live up to their standards, which I think Fulton Sheen is correct. And I guess I'm trying to, I'm wondering if a man who perhaps has been exposed to the red pill, he has these types of ideas. What would your response be to saying like, well, they already have really high standards and we have to live up to them. So what is the problem here?
That's a very good question. So when you're talking about standards, are you talking about them the way that Fulton Sheen means them, which to me means kind of like strength and things like that? Are you talking about kind of the more modern, you know, when you bring up the red pill and people that are, you know, kind of like the sexual marketplace and that level of standards?
Yeah, I think when I think of that, and maybe that's the difference here, is that the standards are pretty materialistic. They're how much money you make, how attractive you are, how big your muscles are, things like that, I suppose. How confident you are.
Right. And that's kind of night and day. The standards that women have traditionally had, because it had to do not just with how, you know, the man looked, but it was predominantly things like how he could provide for her and her family, how he could protect her and a family, you know, if he'd be a good father and things like that. Because particularly back, well, I shouldn't just say back in the day, but throughout all of history, if a woman didn't have a strong man, whether that was her father or someone else, she was a very vulnerable creature. And that's just, you know, kind of by design. Women are typically weaker than men 99.85% of the time. excuse me. So with that being said, you know, the standards are high, but they're high in a completely different way nowadays, for a lot of people. And it does have to do with that kind of sexual marketplace that, okay, well, you know, I like guys with beards, or I like guys that, you know, have big muscles or six packs or things like that. And that's a very superficial, it's a very shallow and materialistic viewpoint, which really does denigrate the relationship between men and women, because it's also, like I mentioned before, it does not lead to healthy and productive relationships. You can't have a society, let alone a family, that's built on, well, I like him because his beard is cool.
That's a great point. I think that you really hit the nail on the head. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Yeah. Cool. I think that, like you're saying, the standards are in superficial things. They're, in a lot of cases, they're high standards that would be considered vices. So the problem is not so much that the standards that they have. The problem is that they're not high standards of virtue. And so when you have women focusing on these things, you're going to have men who are trying to be a pretty boy, and, you know, they're going to the gym and they're staring at themselves in the mirror, and, you know, they're doing all these things that are, you know, okay, maybe there's some virtue to it, but for the most part, you're just trying to impress a woman, and it's not really focused on virtue. It's focused on you know, trying to get into someone's bed.
You know, that reminds me of a point that I could bring up now, but I'll save it for a little bit later when we kind of discuss what men can do to, I don't want to say fight back against feminism, but what men can do to at the very least counter feminism in their own life and how it affects the women that are, I'll say, within their sphere of influence. One of the, I think, the main points, kind of getting into just a couple of general concluding points we've had, one of the main points that I think is important that both you and I agree with is that, you know, maybe some feminist concerns are valid. I don't want to say the responses are valid, but the concerns are certainly valid in many cases, like we discussed with first wave feminism, things like alcoholism, absentee fatherism. Those are bad. You know, no one should be condoning that. People should always condemn that, and there should be, at the very least, you know, communal structures in place to shame people that do that, you know, and to prevent that becoming a pandemic, like it may have been in certain ways in certain places, like urban centers in the 1800s and the 1900s. But then again, 99% of the solutions that feminists propose, out of all the ways, and particularly it progressively more so as we go on from the first wave to the fourth wave, they're just destructive. You know, you have going from the right of women to vote to now you have people talking about like body positivity and you have to find me beautiful even though I'm 400 pounds and obese and things like that. It's funny, my wife was watching someone, I don't know who it was, on YouTube this morning, who was kind of just like calling out Gillette, this was from a couple months ago, for like promoting you know, a bunch of fat lady models for, I guess, what's their I don't know what their women's razor brand is, Venus or something like that. And you know, it's funny because it's become, so many people rail against it, but it's still become so just ingrained in our society that you have these solutions which are, you know, would have been completely silly to people a decade ago, but are now commonplace, and it really is the result of feminism.
I think back to a point that we made, I think it was last episode, and that's that feminism is ugly. It makes women ugly. And it's because it distorts women. And, you know, we talk, you hear a lot of feminists say, well, you're not a feminist. That means you hate women. You're a chauvinist. You're whatever. No, I am not a feminist. I'm anti-feminist because I like women and I want them to be, to grow and to flourish. And I think feminism is destructive to women. So we, as men, should stand up and fight for the dignity of women by opposing feminism. I think that's what we're here to do.
One of the things that I will say, which I don't know if I've said it before on this podcast, I think it's very controversial, but I think it's also very true, and it may land me in some hot water, but it doesn't really matter. I think it is. This is a very accurate depiction. Most people, if not, I don't want to say all, but 90% of feminists that are active feminists that promote it are just not attractive, whether they're obese, whether they're just not attractive in general, you know, or they do things to themselves to make them not attractive. I know a lot of women that I went to high school with that, you know, when I got back on Facebook a couple of years ago, you know, a couple of years after college put them through the ringer. And, you know, there was this one girl that I was in like calculus class with, and she was, you know, very attractive, you know, typical, I think like she was German or something like that. And then I saw a picture of her a couple of years down the road after she went through 5 years at Duke University studying, I think, gender studies, and, you know, her hair short and different colors and things like that. And that's just not one analogy. But if you look at what's happening in the world today, I mean, just take a look at people that are rioting, which I would say are without a doubt, at least not anti-feminist. They're probably very steeped in feminist ideology since it ties in with Marxism and other things. But they're just not attractive people. And I think a lot of people, and we actually did bring this up in our conversation with Beth and Teresa, a lot of people use this as a crutch, use it to make them feel better, use it to try to get some level of power. And I'm not trying to say that that's a reason to oppose feminism, but I think that's something that's very important to, you know, realize when you are trying to, counter feminism, because it does make you a very ugly person on the inside, but also on the outside, it seems to me.
This makes me think of a apt analogy. So in Lord of the Rings, there's this creature called Sméagol, or later known as Gollum, who finds the ring. And, you know, before that, he's pretty normal. I mean, he's not necessarily a good person, but you know, he looks pretty normal. And then as he continues to hold on to this ring to worship this ring, he becomes corrupted and ugly and nasty. And I think that that's what feminism is. If we can't let women, we don't want to let women find this ring and take this ring of feminism, because it's going to destroy and corrupt them. And it's not something that you can wield, like they say in the Lord of the Rings. You can't wield it for good. It is corrupting by itself.
And that's absolutely right. Now, you made a very good point about one of the ways we get out of this is to be a man and fight for the dignity of women. And I'll just do a brief disclaimer that, like we mentioned in our third or fourth wave episode, that, you know, that does not mean you white knight. White knighting is bad. White knighting is upholding the dignity of women for ulterior motives, which 99% of the time is to get in bed with them. That's not the reason why you should do it. You should uphold the dignity of every person, which gets back to our series on justice, you know, and giving people what their due is. But, you know, women, they want a man to look up to. They want someone to feel safe around. They want to follow a virtuous man who sacrifices, protects, and provides for her. And a lot of the reason why, you know, in my example about women going to college, going in normal and coming out, you know, Crayola-haired and, you know, crazy and spouting off things is because a lot of the men have dropped the ball, particularly in college. I mean, if you're a woman in college, if you're an 18-year-old going to college and the only pick of men you have are, you know, frat boys or I don't want to, you know, stereotype all college men, because I was in college before you were in college and you and I weren't frat boys or nerds or, you know, like people that just aren't very strong. It's a very small population, very few number of men that are actually, I would say, in their college years, strong, you know, self-assured, things like that. They know what they want. They're confident in themselves. Because of this lack, you know, like I said, they turn to these ideologies, which give them some level of strength. They give them some level of security, because at the very least, they can always fall back onto that, and they can fall back into things, you know, that maybe make them feel a little bit better about themselves. So it's important to be an example, not just to other men, like we've said so many times, but also to be an example for women. You should be a man. And just by doing that, just by learning and acting virtuously, you're going to, you know, even silently have an influence on all the women that are in your sphere of influence.
Absolutely. I think that women respond well to men who are confident, who are virtuous, who know what they want and know what they stand for. And that's what women look for. Even the feminists, they... You know, part of the reason they're feminists is because they don't see men like that. So if you want to have a traditional feminine woman, you need to be a traditional, virtuous, masculine man. And I think part of this is not being resentful towards women who are feminists, because, yeah, it stinks. And I have trouble myself if I'm trying to you know, find someone to marry, and I see all these women who are infected with this virus of feminism, and it's upsetting, and it's very difficult to not be resentful. I can understand, you know, where those people are coming from, but at the same time, I think that portrays by doing that, you're revealing something about yourself, and that's that you are not really confident. You're insecure, and you need to lash out at feminists because you're not secure in your masculinity. So I think that part of that is, you know, you don't need to go out and own some feminists. Just stand up for what the right thing is to do, and I think the result will follow from there.
What you were saying about resentment towards women or resentment towards feminists, it actually reminds me of kind of an internal struggle I've been having, and you and I have discussed this in private, but it's the whole kind of like environment that is social media and Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I don't have an Instagram, but like those, they all have different kind of like, they're all kind of different echo chambers, but a lot of them, actually all of them, I would say, skew towards the left. They skew towards a very feministic approach. And if you spend really any time on them, you're going to, you know, find people that are going to annoy you. They're going to say things that are just, like, they'll be feminists, there'll be other things, they're going to just piss you off, and you're going to be caught up in this, I'll just say, spiral of resentment and things like that. And it's really important, I think, just to get off social media, because you're going to realize that not everyone in the world is a feminist, and you're also going to realize that it's going to be a lot healthier for you. It's not good for men that are trying to be virtuous to, you know, to constantly, you know, give into outrage porn, give into resentment porn and things like that. Things are going to manipulate you, even if you know you're right. It's not about, you know, being a virtuous man is not about telling people who's right and who's wrong. It's not about calling out people or owning them, like you said, Brian. You know, you don't need to beat people in rhetorical debates. It's about focusing on yourself. And I think it's something that's more and more important and more apparent to me that in order to become virtuous men, I think we really just need to unplug. We really need to, like, live life and not spend so much time in a sphere where, you know, there's all these things that are going to manipulate you, whether purposely or just because of, like, the mob mentality.
Totally agree. I think that another key is that I think that one of the reasons we run to these things like outrage porn or, and by the way, outrage porn is where you go and you find a bunch of videos or something. They're not pornographic. They're just, they make you feel good about yourself because like someone's being outraged about something that you don't like too. So I think that one of the reasons that we run to that is because perhaps we feel alone. We realize that I want to live this virtuous life. I recognize the problem with feminism, with so many problems in the world. But I'm looking around and I don't see anyone that's on my side. I don't see anyone that's, you know, fighting this fight with me. Or, you know, there's very few people. And so, you know, I'm trying to find people that I can agree with. People that are on my team. People that I can feel good about myself because I know that you know, I'm not alone, that we're all fighting the same fight. And I think that's one of the temptations there, is that you run to these things and, you know, you justify yourself, which is fine to a certain extent. But I think the real key here is you need to find men here who are fighting the same fight, but not so focused in being resentful about it, not so focused on this outrage porn, not so focused on, you know, all the bad things. But, you know, let's get together. Let's enjoy being masculine men, traditional men, virtuous men. Let's try to find men that we can hang out with and spend time together and grow a brotherhood. And also find women that, you know, we can interact with that are also good examples. And I think that that's one of the keys. If you are feeling resentful, if you're feeling alone, stop hanging out with people that are pulling you down, either by, you know, sharing that outrage porn with you, or maybe they're just not on the same path as you are. I think one of the keys here is we need to find people that are, you know, looking and trying to grow in the same ways that we are and become close friends with them.
Right. It's very important that we don't associate too closely with unrepentant men, with unrepentant women, because what that really first of all signifies is that you have different moral structures, you have different kind of ideals and things like that. And that's not to say you can't or shouldn't hang out with people that you disagree with, but there is a very serious moral framework. Like, you know, if you have a friend that is considering cheating on his wife or his girlfriend or has cheated on him, or, you know, you find out is, you should 100%, you know, call him out. You should defend the woman. You know, you should challenge the man and be like, why are you doing this? You should do all you can to basically prevent him from doing that. But if he's unrepentant about that, then you should not basically further encourage behavior that is going to lead to such things, you know, leading to him degrading himself, degrading women, degrading his relationship with his wife or his girlfriend or his family, things like that. That's very, very important. And again, that does not mean that you don't need to hang with people you disagree with, because a disagreement is one thing, but living in a sinful way and having very different ideals is another. And it's important that we don't promote that and basically kind of like conspire with people that are doing that.
There's this point that that you'll often hear is that you are the average of your five closest friends, which I think that that's true. You are going to become more like the people that you hang out with more often. And so, like you were saying, you can be acquaintances with people that you don't agree with, that maybe are living a life of vice. But the people you want to be united with, the people you want to grow with, are the people that are virtuous, are trying to grow in the same way as you are. Because I don't think you can be united with people who are living a lie of falsehood, living a lie of vice. That's not something you want to unite yourself to.
And another thing that we can do is to basically prevent ourselves from falling into this thing, and really to really counter feminism, is to make sure we're treating women with pure intentions, defending their purity, but basically treating women as if they were your mother, your sister, you know, any female family member. You would not want to, you know, denigrate them, so why would you denigrate another woman? A great example of what not to do is you should not look at porn. You shouldn't masturbate, because what that does is it makes you effeminate. You know, kind of going back to the definition we had of St. Thomas Aquinas, where a man is accustomed to enjoy pleasures, it's more difficult for him to endure a lack of them. Pornography and masturbation is an addictive thing, even more so than cocaine. We're going to talk about the studies and the statistics behind that down the line, maybe even in our next series. But sex outside of marriage is not good for anyone. Looking at a screen to get off is definitely not good for anyone. And it has a very, very debilitating effect on your relationships with, you know, women you're actually in relationships with, like, you know, your wife or your girlfriend, but also really just with women in general. Because if you start treating women or men like objects, well, you know, it's going to come across with the cashier at nearby Kroger. It's going to come across, you know, at church and things like that. And even if it's just kind of subtle in your mind, we need to also remember that we just should not be putting ourselves in a position where, you know, we could use women, where we could abuse women and things like that. And porn leads us down that very bad path where that could happen a lot more easily.
I'm reminded of a Fulton Sheen book. Speaking of Fulton Sheen, it's a book called Three to Get Married. I'm actually just started it a few days ago. But the first chapter, he talks about the difference between sex and love. And it's an interesting point that he makes, is that sex tends to be very self-focused. It tends to be very functional. And by what I mean by sex is that it's sex that's divorced from love. You're just focused on sex. You're not focused on loving the person. So when you're only focused on sex, you might love them, but maybe you don't. But if you focus on loving the person, then, you know, if you love that person, you get married and then you have sex. So I think that we kind of have things backwards here, is that, and that's kind of ties back into why you should treat all women that aren't your wife as you would your mother or your sister. Because the point is that we should love everyone. You know, even the people that we don't like, that perhaps are even our enemies. We should love them to the best of our ability, because that's what a virtuous man does. But I think that we have things backwards here when it comes to dating, when it comes to casual hookups. And that's that you're not loving someone that you're primarily looking to have sexual relations with, and then, you know, leave them, you know, either that night or a few months later. Like, if you're not marrying that person, you don't know if you love that person. And if your focus is entirely on sex, then your focus is not on loving that person. So I think that's something that we're going to talk about probably in the next series coming up, or in a month or so. So, stay tuned for that.
You know, you're absolutely right that people have things backwards nowadays. And I wish that the answer was as simple as we go to the ballot box in this coming November and we vote for someone that's going to, you know, outlaw things like that. But just like Augustus in the very beginnings of the Roman Empire found out, legislating morality from a government position's hard. And really what I mean by that is that there's just no easy solution to, you know, doing to fixing a lot of these issues, to, you know, limiting feminism. It can't be done at the ballot box. But what you can do, the primary thing you can do, is that you can control things that are within your sphere of influence. Primarily, this is going to be finding a good woman, marrying her, treating your family the right way, being thankful for your family, treating them with responsibility. Don't complain about them. Don't treat them like a burden. The whole ball and chain boomer joke. I think it's the first time we've said boomer on this show, but that's a very, you know, boomer joke. Like, you shouldn't joke about that. Why would you get married to someone who you view as, you know, inhibiting you in any way? You should marry someone who you, you know, for love, for the love of your, you know, family, for the love of God, for the love of community and things like that. You should fight to protect your marriage. You shouldn't let people drive a wedge in it. And this isn't just sexual things. This is like, you shouldn't let work get in the way. You should support and encourage unity in your own marriage and your friends' marriages and marriages of community, because divorce destroys families. As a product of divorce, even though it was later on, you know, I can 100% vouch for that. I can't imagine what it would have been like if I was 10 years younger or 15 years younger. I was in high school when that happened with my parents, and, you know, it still sucked. It still has ramifications today that it would have otherwise not had. So having this in mind and doing your utmost to not just create a good family, but to protect it from the influences of the world, and then to go ahead and raise sons and daughters that respect and value the dignity of masculine men and feminine women is the best thing that you can do starting today.
One point I would add to that is that I think it's pretty common to have friends who say, well, I don't know, maybe it's not that common because I don't have friends. Well, I'm not married and I don't have friends that say this, but I feel like you see this in TV shows, and I imagine people must, you know, like you're out to the bar with your buddies and, you know, maybe you have a girlfriend or a wife and they're like, hey, check out this chick, or like they kind of like encourage you to be unfaithful to either your wife or your girlfriend, whoever it is. You know, don't hang out with those people. Like if someone is saying like, oh man, your wife's on your case again. Like you can't listen to her. You can't, you gotta get away from her. Whatever they're saying, that's like driving a wedge between you and your wife. Like you need to stand up to that person and say like, no, that's not cool. And if they continue it, like, don't be their friend, because they are not, like, if they're doing that, they are not your friend. Your friend supports your relationships. They don't try to destroy your relationships.
One other thing I will say, we just finished up June, which is Pride Month. And, you know, every single corporation, my company included now, unfortunately, is starting to, you know, get on that diversity inclusion bandwagon, which has a lot of problems, to say the least. But not only should you not hang out with men that are going to encourage you to, you know, to lust after other women, either in your heart or, you know, in your physical body, I guess, you should also only consume things that are going to be good for you. I mean, you mentioned, Brian, in your last statement, like it could just be a TV trope. And I agree with you. But I think at the very least, you should not be consuming TV shows, you shouldn't be consuming movies, you shouldn't be adhering to companies that are going to go out of their way to denigrate femininity, to denigrate masculinity, to denigrate relationships, or to normalize things like infidelity, to normalize things like divorce. We should not be, as people that are striving to be virtuous men, take pleasure in that. And I'm not saying you need to go boycott CBS or, you know, whoever. You don't need to go to Hollywood and, you know, stand there with picket signs. But the best thing you can do right now is to vote with your wallet. You know, my wife and I over the past couple of months have gotten rid of everything from Netflix to Hulu to Amazon Prime. You know, not just things about shows we watch, but the companies we support as well. And it's for a lot of reasons, this one included. Because if a company is not going to either stand up against the mob in the face of pressure to, you know, promote such basically degenerate behavior, it's not worth you supporting them. And realistically, you know, that's one of the other things we have in our control. We should not mindlessly consume things anyway. So if we're going about on Amazon Prime and consuming, you know, just buying random stuff, that's equally as bad as going to a bar to try to pick up, you know, loose women or things like that. We need to be deliberate in how we live our lives, and going through our lives by blinding ourselves or giving even silent consent to things that denigrate families, that denigrate our community, that's a very bad thing to do. And that's how we've gotten in this position. And I unfortunately, I think if there's no change, I think we're going to see things get a lot worse.
I agree. I think what all this boils down to is that you need to recognize where you stand and where everyone else stands. And this is not an easy thing to do. Rejecting feminism, rejecting false ideas, destructive ideas that are popular and very common, that's not going to win you a lot of friends. It's not going to, you know, you're probably not going to win a presidential campaign, although maybe you might. But, you know, it's not easy. And that's what part of being a man is about, is taking the hard road, because especially when it's the right road. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. Don't be afraid to be a virtuous man. And don't take your cues from people who are not on your side, who are not following the same path, who are not on the path to virtue. Because those are people that we should encourage. We should point them in the right direction. We should stand up for what we believe in. And like you said, we shouldn't bow to the mob.
Amen. And I think with that, man, that is going to wrap up for now our conversation on feminism. Maybe we'll revisit this when the fifth wave inevitably hits in the next couple of years. God help us for what that's going to bring.
Gulags.
Oh, yeah, let's not even joke about that. Solzhenitsyn's a very good awakener, in a sense, too, for people if they want to know what's coming. But with that being said, I will include that in the show notes, the Gulag Archipelago. It is a very, very important book that our children are definitely going to be reading. I would just say read that if you want to know what's coming. But we do want to thank you again for sticking with us. As we mentioned at the very beginning of this series, this is a controversial topic. You are free to agree or disagree. We'd love to hear your comments, though. It is really important to us to, you know, get feedback. And especially if we can have a good conversation about it. And with that being said, you can find us and have these conversations with us at our Facebook group at, I'll just put the link below because honestly, you're just going to click that anyway. We're also on Twitter. I don't know how much we're really using these nowadays as kind of going back to my social media comment, but we're going to still keep these alive, keep these active. They won't be updated 24 hours a day, but you know, we're going to be active there as much as we can be to keep us sane.
You can always email us, too.
That is also a very good point. We are hosts at vitalmasculinity.org. That is in our show notes as well. You can check out our website, vitalmasculinity.org. And with that being said, we would also really love it if you left us a rating and review. This helps get the podcast out. This can help us conquer feminism once and for all. And I'm not just saying that facetiously. The more men that know about this, the more men and women, I should say, that think critically about this subject, the more change that we can make in our society for the better. And that not just, you know, kowtowing to the mob. So thank you again for listening. And always remember, especially nowadays, virtue makes the man. Good one.